Footnotes and Snippets by Darth Stitch. Read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. Dream of the Endless slowly, but surely, learns that he has so much more to live for, and makes some better life decisions in the process. Footnote the first. Look, Mythos was not an eavesdropper by nature. Lies. He absolutely was, but only if it concerned his survival. The rest of the time, he had the sense to mind his own business. Anyway, Mythos had an inkling this was one of those times, because while Robert Hobb Gadling was not the type of immortal who played the great game, he had the look of someone who was rather handy with a sword, and Mythos was rather fond of his neck after several thousand years of being attached to it. He'd only ended up in the general vicinity of Hobb's office, intending to invite his colleague over for a pint and maybe some supper, as Mythos wanted to escape a fellow history professor who was something of an utter twat waffle. Mythos hadn't expected to walk into what was apparently a marital squabble of some sort, conducted in Middle English and iambic pentameter. Oof, that took him a ways back. Right. So he was about to get on with the very urgent matter of minding his own business, except he caught the gist of the conversation, which basically amounted to, "Lucifer Morningstar, you complete lunatic! What the fuck were you thinking?" Okay, only that sentiment was expressed in a more Shakespearean eloquency. Oof, Hobb was going to hate him for that. Maybe it should be a more Marlowean elegance? But that was essentially part of an argument which, apparently, Hobb had just learned that his idiot boyfriend had gone off and faced down Lucifer Morningstar. Never mind that said boyfriend was the anthropomorphic personification of dreams and nightmares. Nope! Robert Gadling was still a medieval peasant at heart, and one did not piss off the evil one herself, in all her malice and considerable power. Yeah, Mythos was still wrapping his head around the notion of Hobb's boyfriend. Not that he was one to judge, having one broody and trouble-prone Highlander to deal with himself. There was a sudden gale, and lightning cracked across the sky, and Mythos braced himself for some sort of apocalyptic weather event, but apparently Dream of the Endless had walked out in high dudgeon. Oh, dear. "I know you're up there," Hobb said tiredly. Well, never let it be said that Mythos didn't lack for courage. "Well, I wasn't expecting to walk into a lover's quarrel conducted in Middle English, but I had to stay around for the sheer poetry of it. If you're going to mention bloody Will Shakespeare, I'm going to punch you in the nose." Mythos held up his hands. "I was thinking of Marlowe and a pint. A beat. Maybe a few more points?" "You're a prince among men, my friend." It was a good thing that both of them were braced for the hangovers the next day. Somehow, Mythos was not surprised that he ended up dreaming of rain that night. Footnote the second. "But I know things none of you know. I know lots of things. Things about us. Things not even he knows, do you?" Delirium knows that in Destiny's book, she waits at the family table, lost in her own world again, pointedly ignoring Desire, who's now flouncing off to sit near Despair. They were aching to say something clever and spiteful, only to be verbally smacked down by their eldest sister. Desire knew they could never go against death herself. Instead, Delirium remembers her brother Dream singing in that room, with the children and his lover, singing in a way he hadn't in ages. She remembered Dream singing many times, when they were all so young, so long ago. The way she would dance to the music he made. The way they made butterflies and pretty floating fish and other wonderful winged things to dance and fly and laugh and... She remembered. She was delight then. They were happy. But Dream, he didn't sing so much anymore. Not since her nephew was lost to them. There were few things that made him happy now. She could see him, clinging to those few precious things, the people he loved and cared for. She couldn't lose him. Not like they had all lost the prodigal, not again. So Delirium stands up and waits for death to help Dream realize how wrong he'd been about Nada. waits for Dream to let go of his pride once more, because really, Delirium realized that he was getting better at that. The pride thing. So stupid it was. And just before Dream makes his farewells, before he runs off on another noble quest, Delirium darts forward quickly. She throws her arms around his waist, buries her nose in his chest. He smells of stars and multicolored butterflies and the last notes of a favorite song that linger just for a few moments more before fading away. It's a familiar scent to Delirium. It comforts her.
Sister.
She looks up at him, her mismatched eyes steady and focused, even though she could feel the familiar white-hot shards of pain threatening to carry her off again to her comforting world of unnamed colors and sparkles. This was important. Don't be an idiot, Dream. You're not alone, okay?
This is of my own making, sister. It is only right that I should make amends.
Yes, 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 I know all that, Delirium tells him impatiently. Listen, because I can't stay like this any longer. It hurts very muchly. She pulls him down to whisper what she wanted to say, what Dream needed to hear, what Dream needed to remember. And when she lets him go, her face is wet with tears. Dream steps forward to put her hands on her shoulders to offer comfort, but it is her big brother who gently brushes her tears away with his long, slender fingers.
Thank you, sister. I will heed your advice.
You better. When Dream of the Endless arrives at the gates of hell to free the woman he loved, he isn't alone. With him is the captain of the heavenly host, the Archangel Michael. Footnote the third. It had been a decidedly odd week. Eddie Munson swore up and down that he'd seen Billy Hargrove in school, stalking the halls like he'd owned the place once more. The problem was that Billy had died in a horrific car accident 6 months ago. He wasn't missed. They still remembered how Professor Gadling had faced him down when he tried to push Max around. It had been pretty badass. On the other hand, Dustin kept nattering about necromancy and how sightings of the dead didn't necessarily mean a zombie apocalypse, but maybe a rogue necromancer spell gone wrong. There was that lady, Miss Constantine, who'd popped by and mentioned something about hell being emptied and how it was all hands on deck getting everyone back to where they ought to be. And something about how the school was warded and protected? Huh. Lucas's little sister Erica had mentioned about how she met up with those two boys from over at that creepy old St. Hilarion's, and they said Death was very busy at the moment, so they would be running off on their own adventure in the meantime. The trouble was that one of those boys was apparently some rich and important person's son, and he'd been found dead in the school's attic, along with the bones of some other poor kid who'd also gone missing decades ago. Eventually, all the weird shit died down, and it was no more weirder than it usually was at school, what with the suspected cryptid teachers and one additional adjunct suspected cryptid, who happened to be the boyfriend of everyone's favorite history professor. Professor Gadling was just wrapping up a lecture when Murphy appeared at the door, looking like he'd just been dragged through hell and back again. The good professor didn't hesitate. He'd just run over to his boyfriend and wrapped him up in a hug like they hadn't seen each other in 100 years.
I promised you, didn't I? Murphy was heard to have said. Nothing foolish. I've just made things right again.
What the professor's response was, the class didn't hear, but whatever it was, it made Murphy's cheeks turn pink, and he was thoroughly kissed afterwards. The professor pointedly ignored the wolf whistles and the cheers from the class. Footnote the fourth. No favors were granted to Loki the Trickster, who'd been caught by the Archangel Michael before he could impersonate Susanna Ono Mikdo-sama and exchange places with him. No debts were incurred to Loki Skywalker and a design that might have been set by a dream who'd been less happy, already overburdened with grief and guilt that he would never speak of, was never to happen. He would be sent back to serve his sentence, and all the guests of the dreaming returned safely back to their own homes. Dream of the Endless had a realm to rule, friends who cared for him and a family who loved him. He had a home to go to and one who returned his love with equal passion. There were some things still left undone, but he would not be alone to face them. For once, Dream of the Endless was happy and content. End. Notes. I might end up writing about how Dream and Michael wandered through the empty spaces of hell wondering what the fuck is going on before we send Lucy off to do their own thing. I'll get there. Eventually.